Eddie, the Mechanic. Chapter 6. The Spring Track Season, Part 2. The day of the party arrives, and Kathy is all prepared. Since everyone enjoyed pizza after the divisional meet this spring, Kathy decided to have Joe, from the pizzeria, cater the party. The pool is up to temperature, and there is not a dead frog in sight. Inside, the three oak boards installed by Mark and Eddie proudly display all of Eddie's and Kathy's track medals earned over the years. The extensive medal collection will likely be of interest to some of the athletes. Mark manufactured a matching fourth oak board, suggestive of Eddie's and Kathy's future medals. And downstairs, Eddie and Kathy's home gym will probably attract a lot of attention. The guests arrive a few at a time. Not everyone in college has a car, so they arrive in groups. Kathy gives those who are interested the grand tour of her and Eddie's home. Eddie and Kathy's house is sparsely, but beautifully, decorated. With more open space, the home is perfect for socializing and hanging out. The gym downstairs attracts a lot of attention from the athletes. Not a single member of the team who sees Eddie and Kathy's gym can resist doing a set of bench presses or a few curls. While the guests are arriving, Mark is outside with Paula, relaxing in a chaise lounge by the pool. Paula asks Mark, "You've been quiet. Is something up?" Mark replies, "I was just thinking of new ways to mess with McCrutchen, if he even decides to show up." Paula comments, "Go for it. Be my guest." For some odd reason, McCutcheon really irritates Paula. McCutcheon has been grating on Paula's nerves for some time, mostly since they have been on the same team together. Every once in a while, as he is thinking, Mark grins. Paula knows that, from Mark's expression, he is contemplating some new and innovative ways to mess with McCutcheon. When Tessa arrives, on the back of Hoffa's new motorcycle, she makes a beeline downstairs to the gym. Eddie is already downstairs, where he, Bobby B, and Erika are getting in a quick workout. A few of the other team members, impressed with Eddie's home gym, try out some of the equipment. Having seen Eddie and Kathy's home gym many times before, Tessa looks around carefully, searching for anything that may be new. Tessa is concerned that Eddie may have invented another piece of training equipment and is holding out on her. Tessa asks Eddie, "So, nothing new in the gym?" Eddie replies, "No. Not since you've been here last." Tessa is relieved, knowing that Eddie has not been holding back on any training secrets. With nothing new in the gym, Tessa heads out to the pool to jump in. Eddie also heads out to the pool, letting Bobby B and Erika get back to their workout. Out at the pool, Mark mentions to Paula, "Here comes McCrutchen squared." Paula, who remembers quite vividly when McCutcheon was checking out everyone's cars after the divisional meet, replies, "I see that. Just watch. He's going to give this place a good looking over." McCutcheon heads toward the pool and congregates with a few familiar faces from the team. Mark and Paula, who are sitting back and relaxing, are not among them. Seeing McCutcheon and a few of the other team members hanging out by the pool, Eddie tells them, "Hey, if you guys want to jump in, you can change inside." A few of the team members take Eddie up on his offer. Among them are Todd McCutcheon and his older brother, who head inside to change into their swimsuits. Eddie and Tessa then walk over to where Mark and Paula are seated. Mark comments, "I didn't expect that McCrutchen would make it today." Eddie replies, "Me neither. I wonder why he's even here." Paula replies, "To check out your house. He's already ticked off that we have cars." Mark comically mentions, "Wow. We have cars. Aren't we special? Oh wait. Mine's a truck. Does that count?" Eddie, replying in an equally comical manner, reminds Mark and Paula, "It's all that money we made running track in high school." Remembering the Centerville meet during McCutcheon's senior year, Paula replies, "Yeah, we have cars, trucks, and motorcycles, and McCrutchen has ticks up his ass." Eddie then heads inside to help Kathy, as Tessa wastes absolutely no time jumping into the pool. Inside, Kathy is talking with Janice. The group, eager to change into their swimsuits, walks in, and Kathy tells them they can use either one of the spare bedrooms to change. As McCutcheon is waiting to change, he looks over Eddie's and Kathy's vast medal collection hanging on the wall. Along the wall displaying the medals, McCutcheon sees a Harman Kardon stereo, complete with JBL speakers. McCutcheon, overhearing Kathy and Janice's conversation, learns that Kathy and Eddie bought the house a year ago. According to McCutcheon's calculations, Eddie and Kathy bought the house when Eddie was still in high school. McCutcheon counts the medals on the wall, recalling the $3,000 figure purported to be paid for first place. With a lot of gold medals earned by Eddie and Kathy, McCutcheon can clearly see that there is a lot of money hanging on that wall. Worst of all, McCutcheon knows Kathy is a college student and, as far as he knows, Eddie has nothing going on at the moment other than his part-time job as a mechanic. Going into the bedroom to change into his swimsuit, McCutcheon is at a loss to figure out how Eddie and Kathy can afford to live in an area unofficially reserved for millionaires. McCutcheon heads out to the pool area, where most of the action is going on. Paula, who is still relaxing in the chaise lounge next to Mark, whispers to Mark, "See that?" McCutcheon is checking everything out. Mark replies, "It's time to start messing with him." Paula approves, telling Mark, "Be my guest." As McCutcheon gets into the water near where Mark and Paula are relaxing, Mark asks him, "So, what do you think?" McCutcheon asks, "About what?" Mark replies, "Eddie and Kathy's house. What do you think?" Without any discretion put into his answer, McCutcheon replies, "It looks really nice. But now I'm really wondering how college students can afford a place like this." Resurrecting an old rumor, Mark comments, "I guess if you run fast enough, you get paid really well. Think about it. Eddie holds the national high school record in the 100-yard dash." McCutcheon cannot dispute that fact. Adding fuel to the fire and to really irritate McCutcheon, Mark adds, "Me and Paula are building a house about a mile from here. It's almost done. I'm paying cash for it too, just like Eddie did for his." The wheels start turning in McCutcheon's head. The veil has suddenly dropped and McCutcheon now clearly sees the other side of the coin that has been hidden from him for years while he was in high school. Hearing what Mark just said, McCutcheon is now livid. With all of the rumors over the years, all the evidence is now right in front of his face. While he attempts to hide his anger and jealousy, McCutcheon does not do a very good job of it. McCutcheon swims to the other end of the pool, joining his brother and a few other track buddies, likely to discuss what he just learned. Paula, who is always amused by Mark's messing with McCutcheon, whispers to Mark, "I can't wait to see where this goes." Mark whispers back to Paula, "He would have come to all the wrong conclusions anyway. I just helped him get there a little faster." Paula laughs and tells Mark, "Well, here comes the pizza. Let me go and help Kathy out," as she stands up and goes inside to help out Kathy with the food and refreshments. Mark follows Paula, but before he walks away, he tells Hoffa, who is in the pool, "Watch out for Eddie's pet piranhas. They hang out near the skimmers when people are in the pool." Hoffa replies, "Will do, bro." Hoffa, who knows there are no piranhas in the pool, easily catches on that Mark is again messing with McCutcheon. Overhearing Mark, McCutcheon quickly moves away from the skimmer. And Hoffa calling Mark bro, for some reason, bothers McCutcheon. There seems to be a great camaraderie between many of the current and future track team members, which is quite foreign to McCutcheon. Inside, Eddie, also seeing Joe's catering truck through the window, heads to the door to greet Joe and Ariana. Mark walks in and tells Eddie, "I got you in trouble." Eddie laughs and asks, "Oh really? What did you do?" Mark replies, "McCutcheon was wondering how you could afford this house. So, I started up the rumor again that we got paid when we were running in high school. Paula also mentions it doesn't stop there. Mark told McCrutchen you paid cash for the house, and he also told McCrutchen that we're building a house a mile from here and paying cash for it too. Kathy laughs and exclaims, tell me you didn't. Mark tells Kathy, well, I haven't messed with McCrutchen in a long time. I guess the mother load came out all at once. Eddie gives Mark a high five. Kathy comments, he was staring at our medal collection on the wall earlier. Paula replies, yeah, he was counting all that money on the wall. Mark points out, he's going to self-destruct. Bobby B. and Erica, who were working out downstairs, perfectly timed the arrival of the pizza. As they come up the stairs, the spread of pizza is all out on the table, ready for everyone to indulge. Once Kathy, the hostess, reaches for a slice, everyone around digs in. Paula momentarily steps outside to the pool area and informs everyone that the pizza has arrived. Janice, since meeting Kathy and Paula, is now a pizza connoisseur. Janice is among the first to come inside to get a slice or three. In between bites of pizza, Erica blurts out, guess what? Paula guesses, you got your own motorcycle. Erica replies, that's on the list. But no, not yet. Not able to wait for anyone else's guesses, Erica announces, I got accepted to the university. And I got a track scholarship. Kathy exclaims, awesome, girl. Both Kathy and Paula awkwardly give Erica a high five with their hands that are not holding pizza. Kathy is particularly happy that Erica will join them next year. Janice asks Erica, what race do you run? Erica replies, mainly the 440-yard dash, and also the sprints. Oh, and I throw the shot put too. Janice, who will graduate in a few weeks, comments, wow. It sounds like you might be my replacement. Paula adds, I bet so. Quickly realizing that the university has sent out its acceptance letters, Kathy asks, how about Hoffa? Where's Hoffa? Paula replies, he's probably still out by the pool with Tessa. Thinking for a moment, Kathy exclaims, and where's Akinmola? Where is everybody? From across the room, Eddie answers, he's not here yet. Knowing him, he's probably running here. Janice asks, who's this Akinmola guy that I'm always hearing about? Kathy replies, he runs distance. He'll take the gold medal in the mile at state this year. Oh, and I bet he's going to shit a brick when he finds out Mitchell can break a 4-minute mile. Kathy is apparently in the process of assembling next year's additions to the university track team. And as Kathy is in the process of discussing what year's team may be like, the coaching staff happens to walk through the door. It's quite unusual for the university track team to meet outside of practice or a meet. The coaches decided they will show up at the party at least for a while because, after all, they were all invited. And besides, team morale has definitely improved this year. And it's nice to get to know the team better outside of an official capacity. Hearing Kathy mention that Akinmola will take the gold medal in the mile at the state invitational meet, Dr. Braun announces his entrance by asking, so, did I just hear that there's a future gold medalist among us? Kathy replies, almost. Akinmola is running here and is on his way. He's one of the guys I told you about back in January. He won the gold medal in the mile during the indoor season and is going to win at state again this spring. Dr. Braun, who has a great respect for Kathy, informs her, I've not heard anything more about him. We've approved 2 scholarships based upon films and stats from the scouts this year, but we haven't heard back from either of the candidates. Akinmola wasn't one of them. Kathy now knows for sure that one of them is Erica, for Erica has already spilled the beans. She suspects the other one might be Hoffa, but she also knows that it's not her place to ask. Erica was offered a scholarship by the university because of her consistent 440-yard dash in the 55-second range. Erica, however, has not yet met the team's coaches. Erica's times are right up there with Janice's times, who won the 440-yard dash in the divisional meet this spring. Kathy and Paula can now run the 440-yard dash in the lower 50-second range, and it looks as if one of them might also be running in that event next year. Erica, Kathy, Paula, and Janice all attribute their improved performance in the 440-yard dash to Edda's training sled and returning to Mr. Fraser's secret workout. Dr. Braun and the rest of the coaching staff grabs a slice of pizza and mingle with the team. There are a few people with whom he is not familiar, Erica being one of them. Kathy, knowing that Erica received an offer from the university and that Dr. Braun has not yet met her, takes it upon herself to introduce them. As Erica goes for another slice of pizza, Kathy, seeing that Dr. Braun and Coach Herndon are standing together, tells them, "Hey, I'd like you guys to meet Erica." Erica is a sprinter at Northside. Coach Herndon asks, "Erica Gabriel?" Erica replies, "That's me. It's nice to meet you guys." Dr. Braun asks, "So, you're the runner who we extended the offer to?" Erica replies, "That's me. And I'm going to take it." Hearing that, Kathy grins ear to ear. Dr. Braun and Coach Herndon both shake Erica's hand, welcoming her to the team. With Bobby B, also on the team next year, Erica will definitely make sure that he takes proper care of the shot put. After their conversation with Erica, Coach Herndon whispers to Dr. Braun, "Well, I wasn't really expecting that." Dr. Braun whispers back, "You know, I'm usually a little leery when we make an offer based on statistics, but now that I've met her, I really feel good about it." Erica, who now stands 5 feet, 10 inches, and weighs 185 pounds, is built like a brick house. She has been working out with Bobby B, who will be throwing the shot put for the university next year. Strength, as well as speed, is one of Erica's greatest assets, as Chucky and Terry Haynes very well know. Making a 4-mile run to the party, Akinmola finally arrives and heads right for the pizza. Eddie, who has previously asked Akinmola if he needed a ride, tells him, "You know, bro, one of us could have picked you up and driven you here." Akinmola replies, "No. That's okay. I'd rather run." Eddie has offered to pick up Akinmola on many occasions, but Akinmola always declines. Akinmola takes every opportunity to train, which is part of the reason he is the top-seeded high school miler in the state. Seeing Akinmola, Mitchell walks over joining the conversation and exclaims, "Hey, it's been a while. How have you been?" Akinmola replies, "I'm good. And I'm winning everything now that you're gone. How have you been?" Mitchell informs Akinmola, "I'm back for a while. I'm running for the university next year." Akinmola replies, "That's great, my man. Congratulations. I wish you luck. I'm sure you'll do well." Mitchell and Akinmola converse for a while, catching up on the last year. Hoffa and Tessa walk in from the pool and head for the pizza. Kathy, wanting to find out whether Hoffa is the other runner who was offered a scholarship, comes up with a quick plan to find out. Kathy quickly positions herself near Coach Herndon, who is enjoying a slice of pizza with Dr. Paxton, the distance coach. Kathy slyly yells from across the room, "Hey, it's Jimmy Hoffa and Tessa Clement. You guys finally got out of the pool." Tessa yells back, "Yeah. I got to do everything I can to beat Eddie in the rematch this year." As Kathy fully hoped, Coach Herndon mentions to Kathy, "Did you say Jimmy Hoffa? He's the other guy we extended an offer to." Kathy yells out to Hoffa, "Hey, come here for a minute. I want you to meet someone." Hoffa walks over with Tessa, and Kathy, introducing the coaches, tells Hoffa, "This is Coach Herndon, our sprinting coach, and this is Dr. Paxton, our distance coach." Coach Herndon tells Hoffa, "It's really good to meet you." Kathy lets Hoffa and Coach Herndon talk for a while as she walks over and talks with Paula. Coach Herndon and Hoffa talk for a few minutes. After discreetly looking over Hoffa's well-built body, Coach Herndon tells Hoffa, "I really hope you give some consideration to our offer. We've only offered 2 scholarships this year in track. Yours was one of them." Hoffa replies, "You don't know how much I appreciate that. I'm just waiting to see if Tessa is going to the university too." Coach Herndon asks, "Tessa, does she run too?" Hoffa replies, "Yeah, but she wants to swim. She's hoping for a swimming scholarship, but she hasn't heard anything yet. Tessa is going to state next week. I guess they are waiting to see how she does." Coach Herndon comments, "I can understand that. The good news is that, if she applied and hasn't heard yet, they are considering her. They are probably waiting to see her performance at the state meet." That was good news to Hoffa. He and Tessa want to be in the same college together, if at all possible. After lunch, everyone heads back out to the pool. Eddie and Kathy take a few minutes to tidy up inside, consolidating the leftover pizza into a few boxes. Knowing that Kathy has delivered in the past, Dr. Braun asks her, "Has this Akinmola guy shown up?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. He did. He's outside. Did you want me to get him?" Dr. Braun replies, "Sure. I'd like to meet him sometime if it's not too much trouble." Kathy goes outside and finds Akinmola, on her mission to further expand the track team. Kathy returns with Akinmola, and also manages to bring Dr. Paxton along with her. Kathy, introducing Akinmola, tells the coaches, "This is Adekunle Akinmola. He's the top high school distance guy in the state." Kathy then introduces her coaches to Akinmola, knowing that Dr. Braun and Dr. Paxton know where to take it from here. Akinmola's 4:10-minute mile speaks for itself. While not as fast as Mitchell or Stone, Akinmola is still in high school. Kathy wisely steps aside, letting the coaches discuss business. Outside, at the pool, Erica and Mitchell somehow end up in an arm wrestling contest. Mitchell, seeing Erica much more developed than a year ago, made the comment that Erica looks like she's been slacking off in the gym. Mitchell, of course, was only teasing. But Erica made the challenge. As Erica and Mitchell fight it out, the table is surrounded by the track team. The women are cheering for Erica, with the guys supporting Mitchell. In no easy contest, neither of them relents. After a long and drawn-out battle of 5 minutes, they decide to call it a draw. McCutcheon comments to his older brother, Jeesh. He couldn't beat the girl. Erica, hearing McCutcheon's comment, sternly tells him, "Sit your ass down, Junior." Mitchell stands up, offering McCutcheon his seat. McCutcheon tries to get out of arm wrestling Erica, telling her, "I don't want to embarrass you in front of all these people." Erica replies, "Don't worry about that. Sit down, and let's get this started and over with." Reminiscent of many past track meets, Braden exclaims, "Yeah, just sit your puny ass down, and let's get this as kicking underway." With the peer pressure increasing, McCutcheon now has little choice but to take a seat and arm wrestle Erica. McCutcheon takes a seat, and Erica and McCutcheon lock in. Bobby B, starting the competition, announces, "Okay. Here we go. On three. 1, 2, 3. Erica and McCutcheon go at it, and it takes Erica less than 1 second to defeat McCutcheon. McCutcheon claims she cheated. She started early. Erica calmly replies, "Okay, then, let's do it again." Truth is that Erica has much faster reflexes than McCutcheon. McCutcheon is not very fast out of the blocks either. They lock in one more time, and Bobby B announces on three. 1, 2, 3. This time, instead of immediately defeating McCutcheon, Erica holds her arm in the neutral position for about 10 seconds as McCutcheon tries his best to defeat her. As McCutcheon struggles, Erica asks him, "Is it okay to start yet?" Braden interjects, "Yeah, kick his ass." Erica, in an instant, pins McCutcheon, telling him, what's next? The bench press. Deadlift. Squats. McCutcheon does not answer, so Erica tells him, well, I guess I'll see you on the track next year. Good luck, Junior. McCutcheon is beginning to get the feeling that he doesn't quite measure up, not that he ever did with this group. During the arm wrestling match, Kathy spoke with Akinmola, who has applied to a university that does not have a track team. Akinmola has expressed that he wants to run track, but the seminary to where he applied does not have a track team. Wanting to preach the gospel when he graduates, Akinmola's career path is non-negotiable, and unfortunately, he could not find a suitable university with a track team. Akinmola mentioned to Kathy that one of his favorite Bible verses is 1 Corinthians 9:24, which states, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you win." Kathy is quite familiar with that verse. A plaque with that same verse is hanging over her and Eddie's medal collection. As the guests head in and out of the pool and mingle at the tables, Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula have their own private conversation in the back corner of the pool. Hanging out against the pool wall, Eddie mentions to Mark, "I'm really glad they are going to let me run, and I don't have to take any classes. I'm kind of done with school." Mark replies, "Yeah, me too. I know what you mean." Eddie comments, "You know, I just think back at all that crap we had to do in school, and I just can't see myself going through that for 4 more years. Mark replies, "Yeah, and how about elementary school? Half the day was a waste of time." Thinking back at elementary school, Eddie starts laughing hysterically, saying, "Yeah. Elementary school." Mark asks, "So, what's so funny?" Eddie replies, "It's really stupid." Mark tells Eddie, "Try me." Eddie explains, "When I was like in the third grade, the teacher was talking about history and that sort of thing. They taught us that Michelangelo was a really good painter and that he painted the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. So, I thought that Michelangelo was like a jobber, or that he was like a painting contractor or something." Mark laughs, commenting, "Seriously?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I thought he was a really good painter because he didn't drip paint and got like full coverage on the ceiling or whatever he was painting. And besides, if they are going to hire a painter to paint the ceiling of a famous church, you probably want really good painters. I had no idea he was an artist." Mark laughs hysterically and comments, "That's kind of funny." Kathy and Paula also laugh hysterically, none of them apparently hearing that story from Eddie before. Eddie then asks Mark, "So, what's the dumbest thing you ever thought in school?" Kathy and Paula now suspect their turn is also coming. Mark replies, "That's an easy one. But it wasn't really in school. When I was in like first grade, my dad was working on the car. I was standing on a 5-gallon bucket, looking at the engine. There was a lot of stuff under the hood, and I didn't know what any of it was for. But I found the fan. So, I figured out that the way the car moved forward was that the fan blew the car forward." Eddie laughs and comments, "Really? That's hilarious." Mark explains, "It made perfect sense to me. If a large propeller makes a plane fly, I figured out that, in a car, the fan is like a small propeller. So, if there's a big engine and a big propeller, you can go really fast or even fly. But you wouldn't want to make a car go as fast as a plane, so they put in a small engine and a small propeller, which is the fan." The group laughs hysterically at Mark's understanding at how a car moves forward along the road. Eddie, being a mechanic, finds Mark's story particularly funny. Eddie tells Kathy, "It looks like it's your turn." Kathy replies, "I kind of suspected my turn was coming." Mark tells Paula, "I guess that would make you next." Hearing the comedy, Braden dives into the pool and swims over to join the group. Braden asks, "What's so funny over here that I'm missing?" Eddie replies, We're just telling funny stories. Brayden joins the group, wanting to hear what could possibly be so funny. Kathy explains, okay, so me and my parents were sitting in church one day, and we were sitting next to Paula and her parents. And so the priest was giving the sermon. I think I was like just starting middle school. And so the priest was talking about the book of Revelation. Paula starts laughing, and Kathy tells her, okay, I know. You already know this one. Paula tells the group, yeah. This is really good. Kathy continues, okay, so the priest was talking about the book of Revelation and the end times. And so he started talking about the beast that comes out of the sea. And the priest kind of said that we don't know exactly what the beast that comes out of the sea is, but when we see it, we will definitely know. So I whispered to Paula, I know exactly what the beast that comes out of the sea is. So Paula whispered back to me, what is it? So I told her, it's the Loch Ness Monster. It's got to be. So then I asked Paula, how can they not see this? It's so obvious. So Paula told me something like, you might be right. Yeah, seriously. It seems kind of obvious to me too. Eddie starts laughing so hard that he can't say anything. Mark drops underwater for a second, comes up from under the water, claiming, I'm the Loch Ness Monster, and chases Paula for a moment. Brayden laughs, telling everyone, I ain't never heard that interpretation of the Bible before. Who knows, you might be onto something. Once Eddie regains his composure, he looks at Kathy and starts laughing again. Kathy tells Eddie, well, at the time, it made perfect sense to me. Paula adds, it all did seem logical at the time. Once the laughter dies down, Paula knows that it's her turn. Kathy has no problem telling everyone, Paula has a list a mile long. Let's see. There's the putting down 220-yard dash on her learner's permit application where it asked for her race. There's a million boogeyman stories. Oh, and there's that time that she, Paula, who can only imagine what is coming, splashes Kathy and tells her, stop it, girl. We know all of that. Kathy splashes Paula back, starting a splashing contest between the two girls. Once the splashing contest is over, Mark asks Paula, what's this about the 220-yard dash? I hadn't heard that one. Paula exclaims, no. That was so stupid. Kathy interjects, really? Why I think? Paula splashes Kathy again, but Kathy was expecting it and dropped underwater for a second. Mark tells Paula, okay. I got to hear this one. Brayden adds, me too. I ain't heard this one before. Paula knows there is no way out of explaining her experience of getting her learner's permit. Paula tells everyone, okay. So, this is so stupid. So, I went to the driver's license building to fill out my application for my learner's permit. And all the people behind the counter looked so stern-like, if you mess up, they'll send you to jail. Those people made Mr. Crump look like Santa Claus. So, I get the application and started filling it out. And on the line where it asked race, I put 220-yard dash. I don't know what I was thinking. Mark, Eddie, and Brayden start laughing hysterically. Paula splashes Kathy again for making her tell that story. But Kathy and Paula are both laughing too. Paula then finishes her story, telling everyone, okay, so the lady behind the counter tells me, hun, your race is not a number or a distance. It's usually a color. I can still hear her saying that as if it were yesterday. Mark tells everyone, no wonder I've never heard that one before. That's kind of funny. Wanting to hear more comedy, Eddie asks Brayden, yo, bro. It looks like it's your turn. So, what's the funniest thing that happened in the police academy? Brayden starts laughing, prompting Mark to comment, this has got to be good. Braden explains, "You ain't gonna believe it." Eddie tells Braden, "Go for it." Braden explains, "Our class of police recruits had to build this really large shed where we did our training exercises. They've been working on building this training center for a while. Each class of recruits has to build something new or repair something. But we had a problem. The wood to build the shed never arrived. So, our commander knew about a place where the fire department had a bunch of wood that was just delivered. The wood was sitting on the side of the road at their training center. The fire department was gonna use the wood to build something in their training grounds. All the fire department was gonna do with that wood was to build something and then burn it down." Eddie and Mark wonder how this is going to have a funny ending, but have no clue where Braden is going with this story. Braden continues, "We moved out about 2 a.m. and went to the location with three trucks. There were about 10 of us. When we got there, the commander told us, 'I want you to start loading the wood onto the trucks. And if I give you a new set of orders, I fully expect all of you to immediately obey my orders. And do not question me during this operation.' So, we start loading all the fire department's wood into the trucks. About 10 minutes went by, and the commander blew his whistle and told us, 'Okay, men, start throwing the wood out of the trucks.' So, we started throwing the wood out of the trucks, just like he said." Mark comments, "That doesn't make any sense." Braden replies, "Yeah, but it will. Hold on, bro." Braden explains, "So, the security guard for the fire department drives up and asks our commander, 'What are you guys doing here?' Our commander told him, 'We're dumping this wood here. What does it look like we're doing?' The security guard yelled at him and told our commander, 'No, you're not. Nothing doing. Get that wood back on those trucks immediately and get it out of here.' So, our commander told us, 'Okay, guys. You heard the man. Get the wood back on the trucks.' So, we started putting the wood back on the trucks. The security guard left, and we drove off with all the fire department's wood." Mark laughs and comments, "That's seriously funny." Eddie also laughs and mentions that commander was a genius. Braden tells them, "Yeah. And it worked. So, we used that wood to build another building in the training grounds." Mark mentions, "Yeah, bro. And instead of burning it down, I bet you guys shot it up with bullets." Braden laughs, telling them, "Actually, we did. And that was a lot of fun. I'm really glad we got to build something." While Eddie and his group are exchanging funny stories, the McCutcheon brothers and Leggett occasionally look over, wondering what could possibly be so funny. The fact that the tribe's energy is so light and airy is somehow disturbing to McCutcheon. But McCutcheon's observation of the group does not go unnoticed. Braden caught McCutcheon out of the corner of his eye several times, watching with a disturbed look while Braden was telling his story. After spending an hour or so in the pool, many of the team members head downstairs to the gym. A few team members, enjoying the sun, remain in and around the poolside. Dr. Braun and the rest of the coaching staff want to take a look at Eddie and Kathy's gym before they leave. They are quite impressed at the arrangement that Eddie has put together in his basement. The 1,500 square foot workout facility is quite impressive, with a few pieces of equipment that Eddie built himself. Among the equipment is Eddie's squat rack that he designed himself and built with Angelo's help when he first entered high school. A few team members work out for a while. After seeing the gym, the team's coaches head out for the day and were grateful that they were invited. All afternoon, the team members have been checking out Eddie and Kathy's house. Braden is no exception. On the far end of the pool, Braden is checking out the hardscape, particularly where it meets up with what looks to be a beautiful jasmine wall. The wall is actually made of metal framework, with jasmine vines growing on it. From the other end of the pool, the jasmine wall provides a good amount of privacy, and appears as if it is tied into the hardscape. But as Brayden takes a closer look, he finds that there is actually a few feet between the hardscape and the jasmine wall. While Brayden is on the other side of the jasmine wall, he overhears Todd McCutcheon telling his older brother, Scott, I'm going to take Eddie and Mark down. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but they've got to go. McCutcheon's brother advises him, if you don't get rid of them, you won't have a place on the team. You saw what happened when Barbara, that Eric Johnson guy, and the Kathy and Paula duo showed up, didn't you? McCutcheon replies, I know that. I've put up with Mark and Eddie for 7 years. And their group keeps getting bigger every year. Next year, I can already see it. They are all going to take over. And it seems like Eddie and Mark are the boss. McCutcheon's brother frankly tells him, well, if you don't do something, you're screwed. You'll lose more than your position on the team, if you know what I mean. And you know what that will mean for Dad. Brayden stays quiet for a while and waits for McCutcheon and McCutcheon to move to the other side of the pool. Sneaking to the other end of the long jasmine wall, Brayden avoids any suspicion that he was even nearby. Brayden then approaches the pool from the other side, giving the appearance that he just came out of the house. Brayden's training at the police academy has taught him well. Today, he was able to put his training to work. The party begins to wind down in the early evening. The tribe, however, hangs around into the evening hours. Once the rest of the team is gone and only the tribe remains, Brayden tells everyone, I hate to say this, but I think we got a really big problem. Mark asks, really? What's that? Brayden explains, I heard McCutcheon telling his older brother, Scott, that he's planning on taking you and Eddie down. But he said he doesn't know how he's gonna do it. Mark laughs and asks, McCutcheon's going to take us down. Really? I want to see that. Brayden continues, telling Mark, he told his brother that, if he doesn't get rid of you guys, then we're all gonna take over next year. Mark comments, take over. Jeesh. We're just running track. Kathy adds, yeah, and a whole lot better than they do. Eddie comically comments, I'll just belt his ass to the fence. A couple of the members of the tribe laugh at Eddie's comment, but Brayden is still somewhat concerned. Brayden tells Eddie, from what I heard McCutcheon saying, this guy's a lot bigger problem than Chucky. He said he's put up with you and Mark for 7 years. Mark comments, and we ain't done with him yet. Paula mentions, that guy really ticks me off. What a piece of shit. Kathy informs everyone, when he was inside, he was really checking out the inside of our house. I caught him counting the medals on the wall. That guy definitely has a problem. Johnson, who has been on the university team with McCutcheon for the last year, mentions, you know, I watched McCutcheon blow a relay race last year on purpose. Me, Leggett, Stone, and McCutcheon were running the mile medley. McCutcheon ran the second leg, and he messed up both handoffs. His 220 leg was like 40 or 45 seconds. And, right after that race, Stone called him a loser. Then McCutcheon grinned like he thought it was funny or something. Kathy exclaims, I remember that. Stone was really ticked off. Paula mentions, it sounds like McCutcheon wants to be the top dog. Mark comments, if he can't run with the big dogs, he should just keep his ass on the porch. Eddie corrects Mark, saying, or under the porch, with his tail between his legs. Brayden tells the group, I just wanted everyone to know. I'd be really careful around that guy. Mark assures Brayden, McCutcheon will just self-destruct. He's really good at that. Eddie remarks, and I'm sure you'll be right there to help him. Mark replies, you got that right. Paula suggests, from now on, let's all call them both McCutcheon. Everyone certainly thinks that's a good idea. The tribe agrees to keep a watchful eye on McCutcheon, knowing that there's nothing McCutcheon can do until next year anyway. And until next year, the tribe has decided, for the most part, to ignore McCutcheon, pretending that he doesn't even exist. As everyone heads out, Eddie and Kathy head inside for the evening. The sun set a while ago, and Katerina's star appeared a long time ago. As they are tidying up, Kathy mentions to Eddie that McCutcheon is really going to be a problem next year. Eddie replies, maybe he'll just quit. By the way, are all of our medals still on the wall? Kathy laughs, telling Eddie, yeah. I counted them. Stealing one is the only way he'd ever get one anyway. As she's throwing away pizza boxes, Kathy comments, well, we don't have any leftover pizza. Eddie mentions, you weren't really expecting any leftover pizza with this group, were you? Putting her hands on her hips, Kathy replies, no. But, now what am I going to have for breakfast? Eddie replies, well, tomorrow is Sunday. The pizza place opens at noon. Kathy laughs, explaining, I was only kidding. Eddie replies, yeah, right. You're going to wake up late tomorrow morning anyway, and skip breakfast. Kathy replies, yeah. You're probably right. Looking around, Eddie comments, well, it looks like we're about done. Kathy replies, good. We're going to bed really late tonight, so I don't wake up too early tomorrow morning. A week later, Kathy wakes up early on Saturday morning because she has to go to work. Today is the high school state invitational meet. Eddie, however, will not be working, but rather watching the meet from the stands with Mark and Bobby B. Working security detail today at the university, Braden has the luxury of watching the meet from where the action is. Eddie drives Kathy to the high school, so she can take the bus with the team. Eddie, however, drives to the university, where he will meet up with Mark and Bobby B. Easily finding each other in the university parking lot, Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B. head out to the stadium to find a good seat. Only a few athletes have arrived so far, and the stands are nearly empty. Eddie mentions to the group, hey, there's Braden. It looks like he has a whole crew going. Mark suggests, let's go see what he's up to. The group heads over to say hello to Braden, who appears as if he will have a long day ahead of him. Braden, along with two paramedics, is setting up the security tent. Braden will be out in the heat all afternoon, so the tent will give him a place to periodically cool off. Braden's tent, shared with the paramedics, is home to many coolers with refreshments, ice, and food. A large electric fan and a few chairs for relaxing will keep the support staff cool in the mid-afternoon heat. Backed up to the tent is the emergency response vehicle, with any equipment the paramedics may need. As he is walking up, Eddie yells out, yo! Can I get a pizza? Carla, one of the paramedics, comments to Braden, and the other paramedic, Mike, wonderful. It's starting early today. Braden turns around and exclaims, yo, bro. What are you guys doing here? Eddie replies, we came to watch, since Hoffa and Erika will be running for the university next year. Braden, referring to the 4x440 relay, replies, I want to see how they do in our race. Mark mentions, Paula thinks they are going to take it. Braden then introduces the paramedics, Carla and Mike, to Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B. Carla and Mike quickly realize the group that approached is not a bunch of clowns. Letting Braden get back to work, Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B. make their way to the stands, finding a seat with a good view of the finish line. The north side bus arrives, and the team heads to their designated bench area. Eddie mentions, here comes the team. Bobby B. mentions, Mr. Fraser looks happy. Mark replies, he should be. He's got a really strong team again this year. The spectators from Northside head up to the stands, some of them finding Eddie and his group. Eddie's parents, here to watch John today, find Eddie in the stands and also sit with the group. Once the athletes are settled, the call is made for the 100-yard dash. Eddie mentions, John, Hoffa, and Davida are all in the 100. This is going to be a good race. Since they are among the top seeds in the state, the three Northside runners are in the first heat, along with Sokolov, who is the number one seed. After checking John's, Hoffa's, and Davida's block settings, Kathy heads over to the finish line to join Mr. Fraser. After Kathy leaves, Hoffa and John seem to be arguing with Davida about something. As the first heat is about to get underway, Eddie tells Mark, "I'm timing John." Mark mentions, "I'll get Hoffa and Davida." Bobby B asks, "Do you want me to time someone?" Mark asks Bobby B, "Have you washed and sterilized your hands?" Bobby B asks, "Why?" Mark replies, "Because the stopwatches have been cleaned and they are sparkly bright." Bobby B is surprised that Mark remembered the reference to a sparkly bright stopwatch from 2 years ago. Eddie hands Bobby B one of his stopwatches and tells him, "Time John. Let's see how accurate you are." The runners are set, and the gun is fired. John, Hoffa, and Davida are all off to a strong start. At 50 yards, the three Northside runners and Sokolov clearly lead the pack. As they approach the finish line, John crosses first, followed by Hoffa, Davida, and Sokolov, who all appear to nearly tie. Eddie watches as Mr. Fraser and Kathy each give the three finalists a high five. Eddie is quite impressed that his brother just beat the number one seed in the state by a yard or so. Eddie exclaims, "Wow! I clocked John at 9.5 seconds. Mark adds, "Hoffa ran a 9.6 and Davida also ran a 9.6. Eddie asks Bobby B, "What did you clock John at?" Bobby B replies, "My stopwatch reads 10.4 seconds. Eddie tells Bobby B, "Let me see that." Eddie takes a look and, sure enough, Bobby B's stopwatch reads 10.4 seconds. Mark tells Bobby B, "You'd better leave working these highly precision stopwatches to the professionals. You should stick to reading surveying tapes." Eddie, however, lets Bobby B use the stopwatch, giving him something to do during the meet. The events move along quickly, getting to the 440-yard dash. Braden moves over to the finish line, wondering what the competition will bring this year now that he's gone. Seeing a familiar face, Braden walks over to talk with Mikhail Sokolov, now a senior running for Liberty High School. Braden already suspects that Sokolov will win this race. Braden is very interested in what Sokolov will deliver at the finish line this year. The first heat of the 440-yard dash lines up, and Sokolov, the number one seed in the state in this event, is up against Lucius Hill and Paul Davida in the first heat. While they are waiting, Mark mentions, "There's Mr. Ruff, at the meet director's tent. He's obviously not happy about something." Eddie asks, "I wonder who they have in the meet today." Mark replies, "Probably no one. He just came to complain." With the gun about to go off, Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B get their stopwatches ready. The first heat of the 440-yard dash is ready to run, and the gun is fired. Braden, at the finish line, secretly started his stopwatch hidden in his pocket. Sokolov takes an early lead, followed by Davida. Hill, a sophomore, is in fourth place. Halfway through the race, it is clear that Sokolov will win. Davida, however, is giving him a run for his money. And Hill is attempting to overtake the runner currently in third place. At the finish line, Sokolov crosses first, followed by Davida. Hill, taking third place in this heat, managed to beat out his direct competition right before the finish line. On Braden's stopwatch, Sokolov delivered a time of 48.9 seconds. With other heats to be run, everyone will have to wait and see where Davida and Hill ultimately place. Right before lunch brings the 100-yard dash final. John, Hoffa, and Davida have all made the final, along with Sokolov, who ran a 9.5 in this event last year, taking third place. Today, in the preliminaries, Sokolov did no better than last year. While the runners are setting their blocks, Mr. Fraser is talking with Sokolov's coach, Mr. Pushkin of Liberty High. Mr. Fraser and Mr. Pushkin have kept in touch over the last year, sharing information of their respective divisions with each other. While Mr. Fraser and Mr. Pushkin are having a friendly conversation with each other, an argument seems to have developed at the starting line among the Northside finalists. Eddie and Mark know that, whatever the argument is about, its intent is purely to distract the other runners. The gun is fired and, at 25 yards, there is no clear leader. Eddie is at the edge of his seat, waiting for someone to break from the pack. At 50 yards, John and Hoffa take a slight lead over Davida and Sokolov. At 75 yards, Hoffa overtakes John by a slight margin. Eddie tells Mark, "Catch Hoffa." As they approach the finish line, the stopwatches held by Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B seem to click simultaneously. At the finish, Hoffa takes first place and John takes second place. Vying for third place were Davida and Sokolov, and was too close to call. The officials will have to resort to examining the photographic evidence to determine third place. On the way back to the bench, Mr. Fraser and Kathy give Hoffa, John, and Davida a high five. Mr. Fraser clearly thinks Davida took third place, but Mr. Pushkin has a differing opinion. They will have to wait a while to find out. Watching as Kathy approaches the bench, Eddie sees her looking up into the stands. Eddie and Mark stand up and wave, seeing Kathy pointing to the cafeteria. Eddie mentions, "It's lunchtime." Eddie, Mark, Bobby B, and Eddie's parents head to the cafeteria and will meet up with Kathy and Paula. They will now get the inside scoop on what is going on during the meet. Over lunch, Eddie mentions to Kathy and Paula, "It seems like it's pretty quiet down there today." Kathy replies, "Not on your life. The whole meet has been status dramaticus since it started." Eddie asks, "Oh yeah? What happened?" Kathy explains, "Mr. Ruff is complaining that his 4x440 relay team should be in the second heat, and not the first." Eddie interrupts, mentioning, "The first heat are the better teams. Why would he want to be in the second heat?" Kathy replies, "Probably because Mr. Ruff doesn't want his team to run against ours. So, my dad let him run in the second heat." Eddie laughs and replies, "Yeah. Probably just to get rid of him." Mark and Eddie laugh, not too surprised that Mr. Ruff managed to find something to complain about. Kathy continues, telling the group, "And Mr. Rogers, the Parkview coach, was yelling and screaming that Davida should not be allowed to run for our team." Mark points out, "He moved." Kathy continues, explaining, "Yeah, but for some reason, Mr. Rogers was insisting that Davida still lives in the Parkview district. So, Mr. Rogers is on the warpath about it. And Davida's father even came down from the stands to try to clear things up." Mark comments, "Wow. Some things never change." Eddie also comments, pointing out, "Well, if they can't win by performance, they have to resort to looking for technicalities." Mark adds, "And making shit up." Kathy informs the group, "Oh, and it doesn't stop there. In the 4x220 relay, one of the teams transferred the baton outside the transition zone. The lane judges all saw it, and so the coach tried to say the transition zone wasn't clearly marked. So, that coach was yelling and screaming at all the officials. So, they told him to go back to his bench and file a complaint." Mark comments, "Well, everyone else can find the transition zone. It sounds like it's their problem." Kathy replies, "Yeah, I'd say." With lunch over, Kathy mentions, "I need to bring Braden a pizza." While Kathy gets back in line to get Braden's pizza, Mark asks Paula, "So, what was that big argument at the starting line during the 100-yard dash final?" Paula explains, "Davida was telling Hoffa and John that he was glad that Northside picked him up this year." Mark asks, "How would that be an argument?" Paula continues, "John, Hoffa, and Davida were messing with the competition. Davida told them that he still lives in the Parkview district. And so John pretended to get mad and told Davida that he is not eligible to run. Apparently the word got around. And that's why there's a controversy about Davida. Eddie and Mark laugh, now making sense of what Kathy explained earlier. After a few more events, the time for the final event of the day, the 4x440 relay, arrives. Running for Northside is John, Davida, Erika, and Hoffa. Hill could have just as easily made this team, but Davida was a little bit quicker in this event over the regular season. The relay team heads over to the starting line, along with Mr. Fraser, Kathy, and Paula. Mr. Fraser talks with Braden for a moment before the race begins. Mr. Fraser informs Braden that his team should take first place, but the team is not as fast as last year's team. Braden already suspected that. Paula tosses the baton to John, the lead man, who gets behind the blocks. The starter announces, "On your marks." Once the six runners are ready, the starter announces, "Set," followed by the gun. John quickly takes the lead, running a lower 50-second pace. Approaching the transition zone, John hands off to Davida. Seeing Davida on the track prompts the Liberty coach, Mr. Rogers, to rehash the question of Davida's eligibility with the officials. Davida, currently in first place, takes off and is widening the lead slightly. In the stands, Eddie mentions, "John ran a 54-second quarter mile." Mark replies, "He's almost as fast as you were when you were his age." As Davida approaches the transition zone, Erika gets on the track. Davida hands off to Erika, handing her a considerable lead along with the baton. During her leg, Erika knows she must deliver a good time. Erika has already been accepted to the university, but she is very aware that the university's scouts and coaches are watching the race. During Erika's leg, Dr. Karakova, the meet director, approaches Mr. Fraser regarding Davida's eligibility. Erika hands off to Hoffa, who sets out to seal the victory. During Hoffa's leg, Dr. Karakova informs Mr. Fraser, "I know there's nothing behind this, but Mr. Rogers, the Parkview coach, has lodged a complaint against your team. So, I'm pretending to check it out." Mr. Fraser asks, "Oh yeah. What's he complaining about this year?" Dr. Karakova explains, "Mr. Rogers thinks Paul Davida still lives in his old district and is ineligible to run for your team. I've already spoken to Steve Davida, the father. His driver's license checks out. He lives over on Oxford Street." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "That's really funny." Davida started that rumor himself during the 100-yard dash preliminaries and again during the final. He pretended to argue with Hoffa and John. They were messing with the competition. Dr. Karakova laughs and tells Mr. Fraser, "They are all still at it, I see." Mr. Fraser replies, "Yeah. Mark taught them well." Hoffa approaches the finish line, taking first place in this heat and likely winning the gold medal in the event. Mr. Fraser, Kathy, and Paula give the relay team members a high five and head back to the team bench. Dr. Karakova, however, hangs around the finish line, talking with Officer Braden, catching up on the last year. The second heat approaches the starting blocks. Mr. Ruff was granted his wish, and his team is running in the second heat. As Dr. Karakova and Braden talk, Braden hears Mr. Ruff give the Centerville Relay team the usual pep talk, trying to convince his team to run faster than they actually can. This year, however, Braden gives Mr. Ruff's hot air no attention. The gun is fired, and the second heat is out of the blocks. During the race, Dr. Karakova asks Braden, "So, what is your quarter mile time down to these days?" Braden replies, "My best is 45.3 seconds. I can run a 46 without any problem." Quite surprised, Dr. Karakova informs Braden, "With a time like that, you're sure to win that event in the university's divisional meets." Not the least bit bashful, Braden replies, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. Dr. Karakova and Officer Braden talk for a while longer as the last leg of the second heat gets on the track. Glancing over at the transition zone, Officer Braden tells Dr. Karakova, Sir, I believe we have a problem. Dr. Karakova asks, What's that? Braden replies, Don't make it too obvious when you look, but the guy who just stepped into lane one is Todd McCrutchen. Oops. I mean McCutchen. He ain't supposed to be on the track. He graduated last year. Dr. Karakova glances over at the finish line, seeing McCutchen on the track. Dr. Karakova asks Officer Braden, Are you sure? Officer Braden replies, I'm 100% sure. There ain't no doubt about it. We kicked his ass for 7 years, and he's on the university's track team. Using his radio, Dr. Karakova tells the meet clerk to bring the roster for the 4x440 relay to the starting line immediately. While Dr. Karakova is awaiting the arrival of the meet clerk, Todd McCutchen takes delivery of the baton and takes a lap around the track. From the stands, Eddie is repeatedly yelling out, Hey! That's McCrutchen. Mark joins in, reinforcing the claim. Eddie and Mark catch the attention of Dr. Karakova and Braden, who signal that they are aware of the charge. Eddie and Mark walk down to the fence, getting a better view of what is about to transpire. The meet clerk arrives with the roster, which Dr. Karakova carefully examines. According to the roster, running for Centerville are Thompson, Miller, Sanchez, and McCutchen. The problem is that Jeff McCutchen is on the roster and Todd McCutchen is on the track. Dr. Karakova asks Officer Braden, The guy on the track, you said that was Todd McCutchen. Officer Braden tells Dr. Karakova, Yeah. That's him. I'm 100% sure. Dr. Karakova, Then, who's this Jeff McCutchen on the roster? Officer Braden explains, That's his younger brother. The last I knew, he runs distance. Last year, he ran a quarter mile in something like 75 seconds. That ain't him on the track. The one that's supposed to be running weighed like 100 pounds the last time I saw him. As McCutchen, who is leading this heat, approaches the finish line, Dr. Karakova takes a good look at him, vaguely recognizing him from past invitational meets. McCutchen crosses the finish line and is quickly intercepted by Dr. Karakova. McCutchen is told by Dr. Karakova to follow the meet clerk and the lane judge assigned to the transition zone to the meet director's tent. Dr. Karakova asks Braden to accompany the officials and McCutchen. On the way, McCutchen says nothing. He knows he has been busted. Oddly unable to find Mr. Ruff in the coach's area, Dr. Karakova also heads to the meet director's tent. In fact, the rest of Centerville's 4x440 relay team is nowhere to be found. The announcement is made over the public address system, Will Mr. Ruff and the Centerville 4x440 relay team please report to the meet director's desk immediately? Mr. Ruff frequents the meet director's desk during every invitational meet, so he should have no complaint about today's special invitation. While Mr. Ruff makes his way to the meet director's desk, Dr. Karakova instructs the meet clerk, the lane judge, and Braden to take Todd McCutchen 20 feet away, detaining him in the security tent. Dr. Karakova instructs the meet director to return Todd McCutchen to the meet director's tent when he waves. Mr. Ruff approaches the meet director's desk, along with Thompson, Miller, Sanchez, and Jeff McCutchen. Before Dr. Karakova can explain his concern, Mr. Ruff exclaims, What's this all about? Referring to the runners who accompany Mr. Ruff, Dr. Karakova asks Mr. Ruff, Is this the 4x440 relay team that just took first place in the second heat? Mr. Ruff replies, Yes, it is. Dr. Karakova sarcastically asks, Oh, really? Mr. Ruff exclaims, Of course they are. Is there a problem? Dr. Karakova calmly replies, Yes, sir. There is a problem. and the problem is of a very serious nature. Dr. Karakova waves over to the meat clerk, instructing him to escort Todd McCutcheon back to the meat director's tent. Braden accompanies the meat clerk, the lame judge, and McCutcheon. As McCutcheon enters the meat director's tent, Dr. Karakova asks Mr. Ruff, "And is it your position that this gentleman was not running in the race?" Mr. Ruff exclaims, "No. Of course he wasn't. He's one of our team assistants." Dr. Karakova then asks, "Can you explain to me why he is still holding the baton?" Mr. Ruff brashly replies, "I don't know. One of the runners must have handed it to him." Dr. Karakova frankly tells Mr. Ruff, "Mr. Ruff, Officer Braden and the lane judge, both standing right here, and myself, all saw Todd McCutcheon on the track, running with the baton that he is still holding. He has been in our custody since he crossed the finish line." Mr. Ruff exclaims, "There must be some sort of mistake." Dr. Karakova replies, "Sir, mark my word. There is no mistake. Your team is now disqualified. You will be receiving official correspondence from me regarding this situation by the beginning of the next academic year. You and the entire Centerville team are officially ejected from the meet. Please gather up your stuff immediately and go home. And if I see you again today, I will double any sanction that the committee decides." Knowing he has been busted, Mr. Ruff walks away, throwing his hands in the air, exclaiming, "How in the world did this happen?" Heading back to his bench with his relay team, Mr. Ruff knows exactly how this happened. By having his relay team run in the second heat, Mr. Ruff thought he could sneak Todd McCutcheon into the race, taking the place of Todd's slower brother, Jeff. Should Todd McCutcheon had run in the first heat, as originally assigned, Mr. Fraser and the Northside team would have surely recognized him. By the rest of the Centerville 4x440 relay team making themselves scarce at the finish line and immediately heading back to the bench after running their leg, little attention was paid to the Centerville team. And Mr. Ruff's absence at the finish line when the race was over was certainly puzzling. The awards ceremony brings many Northside athletes to the stage. In the 100-yard dash, Hoffa takes the gold medal, John takes the silver medal, and in a photo finish, Davida took the bronze medal. In the 440-yard dash, Davida takes the silver medal, and Hill takes the bronze. John takes the gold medal in the 220-yard dash, surprising Mr. Fraser. Akinmola wins the gold medal in both the 880-yard run and in the 1-mile run. Tom Davidson walked away with the bronze medal in the mile. George Livingston, who has come a long way, takes the bronze medal in the 880-yard run. In the relay events, Erica, Tessa, John Elliott, and Lucius Hill take the gold medal in the 4x220 relay. In the 4x880 relay, Amber, Livingston, Davidson, and Akinmola take home the gold medal. And in the 4x440 relay, John, Davida, Erica, and Hoffa take the gold medal. For the university scouts who were evaluating Erika's and Hoffa's performance, they certainly passed their tests with flying colors today. In the field events, Bobby B was sorely missed, except by, perhaps, the competing teams. For Northside, Joe Sepulveda, a high jumper, takes the silver medal. Undefeated in regular season meets this year, Sepulveda will likely take the gold medal next year. After the meet, Eddie, Mark, Bobby B, and Eddie's parents come down to meet the team. They are joined by the parents of a few other team members. Braden also walks over to the team bench, offering his congratulations to Mr. Fraser and his team. John, Hoffa, and Davida are having their own celebration after sweeping the 100-yard dash and taking the 4x440 relay. Erica disappears with Bobby B. for a while, as Bobby B. heads over to the meet clerk's desk to find out what the winning throw in the shot put was. It doesn't take long for Eddie to ask Braden, "So, what was McCutcheon doing out on the track?" Braden explains, I can't believe that shit. They tried to sneak his ass into the race. His brother was on the roster, but McCrutchen ran in his place. Now having everyone's attention, Braden continues, and Mr. Ruff pretended not to know anything about it. We caught them red-handed. Kathy exclaims, you can't be serious. Braden tells Kathy, your dad really took care of Mr. Ruff. He even kicked Mr. Ruff and his whole team out of the meet. Mr. Fraser smiles and comments, I guess we won't see Mr. Ruff here next year. Tessa asks, why not? Mr. Fraser explains, knowingly having an ineligible runner participate in an event is a serious infraction of the rules. Ejecting Mr. Ruff and his team from the meet is only the beginning. Centerville will probably be sanctioned for at least a year for that kind of infraction. Braden adds, Dr. Karakova mentioned something about some official correspondence coming down. I'd love to be there when that goes down. Mr. Fraser laughs, knowing that Mr. Ruff will not be a problem in the upcoming year. After the meet, Kathy takes the bus back to the high school with the rest of the team. Eddie arrives at the high school, meeting up with Kathy and the rest of the team. Mark and Bobby B also drive up, since there will likely be a pizza party afterwards. Unfortunately, Braden is still on duty and will be missed. The team heads inside, where Mr. Fraser will get a photograph of the medalists. After the photograph, the team heads out to get pizza, which appears to now be a tradition. After the pizza celebration, Eddie and Kathy head home, where they sit by the pool with Mark and Paula. During the conversation, Paula comments, can you believe that shit that Mr. Ruff and McCrutchen tried to pull today? I mean, that was kind of blatant. Mark replies, well, that didn't go exactly as planned. Eddie adds, nothing Centerville ever does goes as planned, unless they plan to lose. Kathy laughs, never remembering Centerville actually winning much over the years. Paula, who has absolutely no respect for McCutcheon, asks Kathy, so, what do you think your father is going to do about Mr. Ruff? Kathy explains, Mr. Ruff is a pain in the ass every year. We heard what Mr. Fraser said. Centerville will probably be sanctioned for at least a year. Mark comments, that sounds like they are being suspended. The group laughs, and Kathy mentions, trust me. If my dad could get rid of Mr. Ruff for a year, he'll do it. As the evening turns into night, Mark and Paula head out. Kathy tells Eddie, it's been a long day. Let's go to bed early. On their way inside, Kathy looks up at the sky to find her star. Finding her star overhead, Kathy sighs and tells Eddie, all those stars. I'd really better get busy.